Honored to be here today. I had an opportunity to speak at the very first meeting that was held here in 2002, and so it's a pleasure to be back and be invited to visit with you. My charge today is to talk a little bit about the Estra cycle, to give you a little bit of a review, and to hopefully set up some of the presentations that will follow. And I'm focusing mostly on the whys and hows of controlling estrus and ovulation. So if we look back in time at what's happened to reproductive physiology, we have to give great credit to what's happened with the use of transrectal ultrasonography, where we have an opportunity to look at follicles and follicle development. As you can see here, there's three different ovaries that have small, medium, and large-sized follicles. And we look down here in the right-hand corner, we're looking at a follicle we call a dominant follicle, which is a follicle that potentially could become a preovulatory follicle to produce an egg that can be fertilized after ovulation occurs. This is a blown-up slide showing you what one ovary would look like with multiple small follicles along the upper left-hand part of that ovary, and a nice 12-millimeter follicle, which is close to preovulatory size, depending on whether you're talking, whether it's dairy or beef cattle. And then you can see a very nice corpus luteum right here. You'll recall from your learning about reproductive physiology, when a follicle ovulates and the oocyte or the egg is expelled into the infundibulum of the oviduct, that what's left behind becomes a corpus luteum. And you can see that this corpus luteum has a cavity, and that's basically filled with some blood and fluid. It'll eventually go away about day 12 to 14 of the cycle, but it's usually indicative of a early forming corpus luteum. You rarely see a cavity in a corpus luteum when you're doing pregnancy diagnosis out about 35 days, but once in a while you do see that. So what happens then is a cow comes into estrus or heat, that dominant follicle or preovulatory follicle is producing the hormone estrogen. And estrogen is what makes Bossy Ball, so to speak, causes her to show symptoms of estrus, causes her to mount, and eventually she will stand in the presence of a bull or in the presence of other mounting females. And that's indicative that she is in her fertile period of her cycle, and she's in estrus. If inseminated appropriately or mated by the bull, she can conceive. What estrogen does is it triggers the release of luteinizing hormone, the purple line that you see there. And that's the hormone that's released from the pituitary gland that will induce ovulation in the beef cow in about 30 hours after the onset of estrus. Note that the peak in estrogen and the peak in LH are fairly closely associated, and it's that peak in LH that drives the process of ovulation, so the follicle will release the egg in about 30 hours. So what happens then to that follicle after ovulation, as I described earlier with the sonogram photo, it will develop into a corpus luteum. And so early in the estrus cycle, you see a corpus luteum that forms, and it's reddish colored there. That's the corpus hemorrhagicum. That's because there is some blood in that cavity, and eventually that will go away, and it will become a full-blown corpus luteum. And as if you've seen corpus lutea that have been excised for reproductive tracts, they are very yellow in color. It reaches a maximal size about 10 to 12 days after ovulation. And then in the absence of a viable embryo, that corpus luteum will eventually regress in response to prostaglandin F2-alpha, which is released from the uterine endometrium and causes the demise or the death of the corpus luteum. That would lead then to the onset of another estrus period or heat period. Now, the purpose of prostaglandin obviously is to bring the cow to estrus again, and of course that will start a new estrus cycle. Here is shown what happens when we intervene in the estrus cycle and use gonadotropin releasing hormone, or what we simply refer to as GnRH. Gene RH is administered, it can be administered at any time or any random stage of the estrous cycle. It will induce the release of luteinizing hormone, which is the hormone that will cause ovulation. It'll peak in about 2 to 4 hours after a Gene RH injection, and that will lead to ovulation in about 24 to 30 hours. And so the time period here from Gene RH to ovulation is just a little bit shorter than it would be if we looked at the spontaneous LH surge that occurs here, being about 30 hours. Gene RH can induce ovulation in about 24 to 30 hours. How effective is Gene RH in the cycle? If we look at this slide here, we can see that there are different points of time during the estrous cycle when Gene RH is successful in inducing ovulation. We're looking here at estrus here at day 0, and then estrus here again about day 20. What is shown here in the blue circles are what we'd refer to as waves of follicles that typically develop during the cycle. After estrus, a new wave of follicles will begin to form, and you can see as those follicles will grow. And eventually, one of these follicles is selected and becomes a dominant follicle. When it's dominant, it has the ability then to respond to Gene RH, induced LH release, and it'll cause that follicle to ovulate. So you'll notice that early in the estrous cycle here, Gene RH is not effective at all in inducing ovulation because the follicle is not mature enough to respond to that stimulus. Later in the cycle, you'll see here, it's more effective. There's a period of time it's a little bit less effective. And that what happens here is that first dominant follicle is becoming atretic. It no longer is responsive to hormones, and it will eventually go away, so to speak, or become atretic. And a second follicular wave begins right here and usually produces the oocyte or the egg that will be ovulated after the next estrus. Along the bottom part of the slide, you'll notice that I'm showing you some data from the Missouri group that shows that 0% of cows will ovulate on day 2, 75% on day 5, 66% on day 9, 50% on day 13, and 58% on day 18. And that's based on staged days of the cycle when Gene RH was given to beef cows. I'm not used to this mouse. Did I skip a slide? No, okay. There we go. So let's look at a typical protocol that many of you probably used. We refer to this as the 7-day co-sync protocol. It includes the CEDAR or the progesterone-releasing insert that's placed into the vagina. And let's talk about what happens here at the beginning of this protocol. So what is the role of Gene RH? Well, as I described to you earlier, Gene RH will cause LH release, and that should cause ovulation. Depending upon the day of the cycle, it may be more or less successful. And, of course, the other challenge is that we do have cows that are not cycling when we begin our protocol before AI. So we've got anestrous cows. These are cows that have not yet started to cycle. They've never formed a corpus luteum since calving and potentially can respond to this Gene RH injection to produce their first corpus luteum after calving. We also have cycling cows that are at different stages of the estrous cycle. As I said earlier, some of those may respond to that injection and form a corpus luteum. So we may have cows that have a corpus luteum when we treat them with Gene RH, at what I'll call Gene RH 1, that may form a second corpus luteum. We may have cows that have a corpus luteum that don't respond. So we could end up at the time of prostaglandin with cows that would have one corpus luteum, maybe two corpulutea, and sometimes if it's an anestrous cow that did not respond to Gene RH 1, she still does not have a corpus luteum at the time of prostaglandin. If we look at the responsiveness in data from Atkins, and Mike Smith and Dave Patterson's group at Missouri, you can see here the response to Gene RH when cows were treated with Gene RH at what I call Gene RH 1. 50% of the cows across the estrous cycle would produce ovulation during the estrous cycle. So it was a forced intervention by using GnRH. 77% of those cows ovulated at the second GnRH injection, at the time of breeding or just before the time of breeding. And then what's interesting, if you look at these data here, cows that ovulated to the first GnRH injection, 83% ovulated to the second GnRH injection. If they failed to ovulate to the first GnRH injection, about two-thirds of them ovulated after the second GnRH injection just before breeding. Now, if we look at anestrous cows, in another study they demonstrated the following. About 36% of the anestrous cows would ovulate in response to GnRH1. 71% ovulated in response to GnRH2. If they look at the combination then, as we saw earlier with cycling cows, if a cow if she responded to GnRH1, 80% of the time she would ovulate after GnRH2. If she failed to respond to GnRH1, 66% of the time she would ovulate to GnRH2. You see, these are really quite similar here between cycling and anestrous cows. If they had a seeder incorporated into that program and responded to GnRH1, 73% of them also ovulated after GnRH2. If they failed to ovulate in response to GnRH1 in the presence of a seeder, 69% ovulated after GnRH2. So it's not perfect. We will have cows, when we give GnRH2, that will fail to ovulate to that stimulus. Now, let's talk a little bit about why we use progesterone or progestogens in some of these protocols. Here I'm illustrating the seeder, and you can see here that I'm asking the question, why progesterone? Well, we know if we go back into the 1970s that progesterone is important in a suckled beef cow because it does a couple of things. First of all, it seems to regulate, if I can use that word, regulate the uterus. If a cow ovulates in response to GnRH1 here, and there's no progestin produced, the corpus luteum maybe fails to form, or she's not been exposed to progesterone before that period of time, she'll have what we call a short cycle. So she'll ovulate, and about 8 to 9 to 10 days later, she'll come back into estrus. Those cows are fertile. They will, in fact, conceive. Dr. Kirchhoff showed that back in the 80s, that those cows will form a corpus luteum. They will conceive, but because the cycle's so short, that embryo doesn't have a chance to survive and establish pregnancy. For cycling cows, progesterone seems to be very important there in terms of having some kind of pro-fertility effect. But in both cases, in the presence of progesterone, we don't have cows coming into estrus in this period of time, this 7-day period of time, which is good because we're expecting them to come into estrus after prostaglandin, and that allows us to either breed at estrus or to have an opportunity to get those cows to conceive in response to a fixed time insemination. What happens to the corpus luteum if there is a corpus luteum during this period of time? If a cow is late in her cycle and she would typically, the corpus luteum is due to regress according to its natural timing, it will still regress during that period of time. So it will spontaneously regress, and the seeder, the progesterone coming from the seeder, will keep that cow from expressing estrus. And that would only apply to cows that are really late in the cycle whose CL should typically regress according to their own natural timing during that 7-day seeder exposure. Now, if you look at another protocol where we would use MGA, feeding MGA or progestin, this is a protocol where MGA is fed for 14 days, and then a period of time is left here for females to come into estrus, typically heifers, and then they come back with a prostaglandin and GnRH protocol here. Well, MGA is really important here because it also does similar things that the seeder progesterone will do. For peripubertal heifers, and also for anestrous cows that are close to starting their estrous cycles, exposure to the progestin, MGA, will in fact cause some of those cows to cycle and to produce their first corpus luteum. If a cow is cycling when she starts the progestin treatment, and I'm showing you here six different cows. So the blue box represents that 14 days of progestin treatment. And you can see here that we've got a cow that's about day one of her estrous cycle, about day four, about day six, day nine, day 11, day 13. So there's all at different stages of the cycle. They go on the progestin feeding treatment. And according to the natural timing of their own corpus luteum, it will regress. So you'll notice that these cows here that started between about day 6 and about day 13, their CL will regress during that 14-day feeding period of MGA. And those cows will not come to estrus because the progestin will prevent estrus from occurring, but will come into estrus after the feeding is ended and MGA clears from the blood supply. We have cows here that are early in the cycle, as these top two cows. In these cases, their corpus luteum is just either starting to regress or will regress shortly after the feeding period ends. So what happens to fertility is the cows whose corpus luteum was maintained throughout the progestin feeding period and regresses as that feeding period ends or just afterwards, those cows or heifers will have normal fertility. In contrast, the heifers whose CL regress during the period of MGA feeding, they will have very poor fertility. Because what happens in these cows is that we have a dominant follicle that continues to develop during that period of time, and it becomes what we call an aged follicle, if you will, and those cows will produce an oocyte that's fertile, but it dies in the first several days of embryo development. And so that's why in this protocol, this 19-day period here is a period for those animals to come to estrus, but we don't breed them because most of them will be very poorly fertile. Okay, let's talk a little bit about what happens when prostaglandin is given. The purpose of that prostaglandin treatment is to regress any luteal tissue that's there, whether it's the single corpus luteum that formed in an anestrous cow, or it's a single corpus luteum in a cycling cow that had a CL at the time we started, at the time GnRH1 was given, and she didn't ovulate and form a second corpus luteum, or we have a cow sometimes that has two corpuludia. And the purpose of that prostaglandin is to cause that luteal tissue to regress so those cows or heifers will come into estrus. And so the role of prostaglandin is very important. If it doesn't work properly, then there's no way that those animals will be fertile to a timed insemination. And if it doesn't work at all, if we're doing estrus detection, those cows will not likely come into estrus unless they were close to the end of their cycle when the cedar was removed and prostaglandin was given. So how effective is prostaglandin? I'm showing you in this slide, first of all, we're looking at the blue shaded area represents progesterone concentrations during the estrous cycle. So day zero here would be estrus. Day 21 would be the next estrus. And blue represents the corpus luteum function secreting progesterone during that cycle. The red line represents a first wave of follicles that develop in the early part of the cycle, and the yellow line represents the second wave of follicles that we looked at earlier. The black bars here represent the luteolytic success when we give an injection of prostaglandin to cows. And you'll notice here that typically, early in the cycle, there's an increase in the luteolytic success of prostaglandin. It really doesn't reach its optimum or maximal ability to regress the corpus luteum until we get out here about day 12 of the estrous cycle. I've circled this area right here in red because this is the problematic CL regression group. These would be cows on a protocol that would have a new young corpus luteum that formed after GnRH1. So they would be either, that corpus luteum could be 5, 6 days old. And you can see based on a spontaneous cycle that the regression success is relatively small, or it's relatively less in those early corpulutia. And so those are problematic. Those would be cows that we may have difficulty in regressing the corpus luteum. Just to illustrate that, I'll show you these data. They actually come from dairy cattle, but they illustrate the point I just made. What we're looking at here is the age and the number of corpulutia, or CL, at the time of prostaglandin treatment that was 7 days after GnRH1. Okay? And then we're looking at the proportion of cows with CL regression after a single prostaglandin injection was given. So the first category here, these would represent cows that did not have a corpus luteum at the time of GnRH1. They ovulated in response to GnRH1, formed that corpus luteum, and they fall in that problematic group. They're the cows or heifers that have CLs that are 5 or 6 days old. You can see here, if a single injection of prostaglandin is given, only 64% of those corpulutia responded, regressed, and allowed the cow to come into estrus. If a cow had an original CL, that is, she had a corpus luteum at the time of GnRH1, and she did not ovulate, so she just maintained that corpus luteum, 97% of those CL will regress in response to a single prostaglandin injection. But this is what's really interesting. If a cow had a corpus luteum at GnRH1, and we induced a new CL, so now she's got an old original CL and a new young CL, the regression of those two corpulutia is in the 90% range, which tells us that when that mature corpus luteum starts to regress, it's going to cause the demise of a younger CL as well. And there's lots of biology we can get into that, but that's what's really neat about it. If you do have two CL, usually that young CL is going to go away at a very high percentage rate, and that's because there's an older CL that's going to go down too in response to prostaglandin. So what happens now if we're going to detect estrus? And we've talked about follicle waves. We've talked about whether follicles can respond to GnRH or not. What happens to when cows come into estrus? What determines the length of time from giving prostaglandin to when they come into estrus? If we look at a normal estrus cycle, as illustrated here, where the corpus luteum would typically begin regression about day 18 or 19 of the cycle, generally, that cow is going to come into a spontaneous estrus or heat in about 3 days. And that's because we have a follicle there, a dominant follicle that would result generally from a second follicular wave that's mature in size, it's capable of responding to LH eventually and ovulate. And so those cows are going to come into estrus in about 3 days. That's typical for a 21-day cycle for a heifer or a cow. But what would happen then if we gave prostaglandin early in the cycle, say about day 8 or 9, as illustrated here? Well, you can see there we have a nice follicle, okay, a nice follicle size that's there. That would be the first wave dominant cycle, the first wave dominant follicle. And that prostaglandin injection would cause luteal regression, causes progesterone to go down to basal levels. And because we have a nice mature follicle there, it's going to ovulate fairly quickly. And so we have a very short interval to estrus. Oftentimes those cows or heifers will be in estrus in 36 to 48 hours. And that resets everything. That follicle goes ahead and ovulates, as illustrated here. And now, where we had day 12 before, what would have been day 12, we have reset the estrus cycle to day 0 again. And so now we've reset the cycle. The cow is beginning a new cycle. She starts to develop a new follicular wave. and we have short-cycled the cows, so to speak. So we have a very short interval of estrus here because we had a dominant follicle that was responsive and ready to go. Now, what would happen if we gave prostaglandin about day 11 or 12? You can see from the red circles, now that first wave dominant follicle is starting to become atretic, and we're seeing a new second wave follicle begin to develop. Now, that second wave dominant follicle is really small, and it's unable to produce enough estrogen, it's not mature, and so it's going to take time for that event to occur. Furthermore, this first wave dominant follicle is unrescuable. It cannot be rescued. It's already begun atresia and it's going away. So the cow has to wait, so to speak, for that second wave dominant follicle to become large enough here to produce enough estrogen to bring her an estrus. And so this interval from prostaglandin to estrus is going to be about 5 days. And so typically, some of you are old like I am, you go back in time for the very early data with prostaglandin, what we saw is that the typical response to prostaglandin is we see cows coming into estrus between 0 and 5 days. 0 and 1 day cows, those cows come in right away, their corpus luteum was regressing spontaneously, so the prostaglandin wasn't needed there. But most of the cows that came in were between days 2 and 5. 2 day cows would be those cows, my first illustration, the 5 day cows is like this illustration here, where we're between follicular waves. And so if there's not a follicle there ready to produce enough estrogen and mature enough, those cows are going to take longer to come to estrus than those that have a follicle that's ready to go. So you can see that the cycle's been reset again here. Instead of day 16, where now estrus occurs on her old clock, it's now reset to day 0 and she starts a new cycle. So what about GnRH2? We've talked about how it's important in causing ovulation. Generally, in a lot of the protocols, we give GnRH2 and we breed the cow at the same time. There is one data set, if you go back to Tom Geary's work at Colorado State, where they compared the co-sync, what they were calling co-sync then, where they gave, there's only 48 hours here between prostaglandin and when GnRH2 was given and AI occurred. And then they compared it to a group of cows that they called off-sync 48, where they gave GnRH on day 9 and bred the cows 24 hours later. You can see that the pregnancy rates are the same. They also did calf removal there, and the cows from whom the calves were removed for 48 hours actually had about 9 points better fertility than the cows that didn't have their calves removed. But it tended to only work well in older cows, where the calf removal had a more positive effect. Now, we just did an experiment here, and this is only one small data set. There's more cows will be added to this study, where we compared typical co-sync that we've talked about earlier. The difference is if we put patches on these cows, if the patches were activated, we did not give the second dose of GnRH. If the patches were not activated at 66 hours, we gave GnRH at the time we bred the cows. The other group, we gave GnRH at 48 hours, regardless of what the patches looked like, whether they're activated or not, and we bred those cows 18 hours later. And these are the results. At 48 hours after prostaglandin, we only had about a fourth of the cows in estrus already. Okay, by 66 hours, 64% of the cows in the co-sync group were in estrus, only 43% in the off-sync group. Why is that? Because when we gave this GnRH injection at 48 hours, it suppresses estrus. But look at the fertility here. If cows came into estrus by 66 hours, we had close to 60% fertility to the time insemination. This is what's interesting. The cows that did not come into heat in the co-sync group, they got GnRH at the time they were inseminated at 66 hours, fertility was 7%. And it was 25% in the cows that actually received GnRH earlier on. So to summarize what we've talked about today, progesterone is required to regulate the postpartum uterus to prevent short estrous cycles. And that's why in MGA. That's why in MGA protocols or CEDAR protocols, progestin or progesterone is really important. We know that GnRH can induce ovulation. It's not perfect. About 50 to 75% of the time in cycling cows and 36% in anestrous cows. We know that complete corpus luteum regression is age dependent. Okay, it depends on the age of the corpus luteum. And the presence and the maturity of a dominant follicle really determines when estrus occurs after CL regression. So I thank you for your attention.